this is our one chance. We don't want to look back in a dozen years and say, ooh, this healthcare thing's gotten out of hand.
Look, we campaigned on this. We assured the American people that if you put Republicans in charge, we would fix what is in a death spiral.
Now, I know that there are strong views about this. There should be strong views about this. Healthcare is very personal.
Can I give you a little secret? I don't even know what the GOP plan is.
Yeah, it is Obamacare gone.
Republicans like to tell this story about how the Affordable Care Act is unraveling. It's a fiction that they created.
We could just let Obamacare crash under its own weight.
We're seeing the Obamacare healthcare marketplace collapse.
It's been an unmitigated disaster.
The risk in eliminating the individual mandate is that insurers still have to provide coverage to people with pre-existing conditions, but may not get enough healthy people to balance that out.
As access to does not mean that they are guaranteed health care. I have access to buying a $10 million home. I don't have the money to do that.
Rather than getting that new iPhone that they just love and they want to go spend hundreds of dollars on that, maybe they should invest it in their own health care.
But it must be the plan they want, not the plan forced on them by our government.
This is The Takeaway. I'm John Huckenberry in the pilot seat, trying to pilot us out of the death spiral. It's kind of a day for plan Bs or second tries or restarts or redos. Thanks so much for listening. And we especially appreciate it because we know your listening is voluntary. More about that in a moment. This hour, we have a very surprising exploration of gender issues in the military and how the women's movement in the African nation of Liberia has lessons for the confusing aftermath of the 2016 election right here in the USA. Also, the Trump administration's second try on its Muslim country travel ban relieves some Iraqis who are not a part of the ban all of a sudden. But still, it makes it hard to project an actual policy to the nations of the Muslim world. But first, is it true the brand new American Health Care Act, the AHCA, wants to take a page from public radio and get rid of the Obamacare compulsory mandate to sign up for health care? It's going to be voluntary from now on. By Easter and Passover, the Republican leadership and the Trump administration hope to pass this AHCA and make good on their promise to replace the Affordable Care Act with a voluntary system. There are more details to the system, and we'll be talking with Todd Zwillick about that in just a moment. But will it get the uninsured to sign up voluntarily? Obamacare signed up well over 10 million people, according to conservative estimates. Will voluntary incentives outdo that number? Can they? There are also no cost or coverage estimates for this plan, and there isn't 100% buy-in from the congressional Republicans, four key Republican senators, all from states that opted to expand their Medicaid program under the Affordable Care Act, the ACA, have said they will oppose any plan that still leaves millions uninsured. So, Todd Zwillick, Takeaway Washington correspondent, it's voluntary, but will it work?
That's the big question. Will it work politically for millions of people, John, who pay for their coverage, who have coverage and don't want to lose it? And will it work for the factionated Republican conferences in the House and the Senate, who, as you said, are going to take the next couple of weeks to try to meet the very ambitious goal of getting a replacement passed by Easter Passover, the middle of April? That seems awfully ambitious considering the number of senators who are gazing over to the House today and saying, I don't know about this plan that they're hatching over there, especially because I don't know how much it's going to cost. You haven't told us how many people it's going to cover, and you haven't told us what's going to happen with Medicaid. All questions are going to have to be answered here, and we can talk about those details.
Is this a Trump plan? Is it a Ryan plan? Is it a compromise plan from within the Republican caucus of the House?
This is a Paul Ryan plan that has run into the political realities of 7 years of a country on increasingly popular Obamacare. Paul Ryan has had designs on the healthcare system for his entire career. So has Tom Price, the HHS secretary. We all know that. And now you're in this situation where millions of Americans have realized some benefits either on the individual insurance markets under the ACA or through expanded Medicaid, John, in 31 states. Now, we all know that Republicans have had as the top plank in their platform for the entire Barack Obama presidency doing away with Obamacare, right? They had those, whatever, 40 or 50 repeal votes. Well, that's fine, taking, you know, taking shots at the punch clown. This is different now. This is Paul Ryan's aspirations meeting a political reality. And that is partly why many conservatives in the House, maybe to Paul Ryan's right, have already started panning this plan as Obamacare 2.0, Obamacare Lite. The chairman of the Conservative Republican Study Committee has already called it a Republican welfare entitlement. So getting all the Republicans on the same page here. This is early days, by the way. There's just because some Republicans are panning this plan doesn't mean it can't pass, doesn't mean something can't pass. It means it's probably not going to pass in the form that we're talking about today. And we can talk about sort of what the political realities mean for that form and for consumers, too.
The key metric, and I hate to use that word because it's jargon, but the Obamacare plan signed up over 10 million people, and some Democrats will tell you it was like 22 million people who were signed up. Is that the target that Republicans with a voluntary system have to meet for this to be politically viable in 4 years?
Well, really, the political viability, it seems, is going to depend on individual voters, their individual pocketbooks, and their individual experience with their insurance company and with their doctor. Sure, there are lots of political talking points and top-line rhetoric that will get made if people lose coverage under the Republican plan. There was an aspiration when this got started, which was aided by President Trump's own rhetoric, which I can tell you drove congressional Republicans crazy, that everybody who's covered now will continue to have coverage. It will be better and cheaper. Nobody who's ever looked at healthcare policy thought that that was a reality or anything close to reality. There are trade-offs in healthcare policy, in particular, so many interconnected parts. It was fun for the president to say that, but nobody putting on the green visors, John, and getting down to the reality and the billions of healthcare coverage thought that that was ever realistic. So what is realistic? Replacing the individual mandate, as you said, the requirement that you buy insurance, that goes away, but they still need a way to encourage people, to get people to buy into this system, because if you don't, you're going to have an old system where only people who need insurance, who are sicker and older, are the ones who buy it. If you get that, you get very expensive coverage and a bunch of young, healthy people waiting out. So how do Republicans do that? They don't force you to buy coverage anymore, but if you have coverage that's dropped for more than 63 days, let's say you leave your job and you go to become self-employed, 63 days pass, the insurance companies can now charge you a 30% surcharge. They're trying to encourage you to keep your coverage, to not let it lapse. But this could have a perverse incentive. One thing it could do, it could have the opposite effect. You might be more willing to pay that 30% if you need coverage than if you don't. And then there's a system of tax credits. They're not called subsidies here, but there's a system of tax credits in the new plan, John, that basically shifts benefits, and I'm talking in generalities here, away from older and sicker people and toward younger and healthier people. If you're older and sicker, you're probably going to do less well under the Republican plan as it's currently designed. And if you're younger and healthier, you'll probably do a lot better under the tax credit system that's designed. And let me finally tell you about Medicaid. The Medicaid expansion, which covered more than 10 million people in 31 states that took it. The AHCA does away with the Medicaid expansion, but only after 2020. What they're telling these states is you can keep your expanded population and we'll keep paying for them through 2020. On January 1st, 2020, the expansion is over. It's frozen. No new people can come on under the expansion. And what we expect after that is for Medicaid populations to drop off over the years, and states then have to freeze their Medicaid enrollments and they get a block grant after that. So between now and 2020, you wouldn't see a lot of change if you were in a Medicaid expansion state, but after that, rolls would probably drop off significantly.
Let's hear some reaction from people who have weighed in on whether this is a good idea or what political battles are yet to be fought.
You're first going to hear from Greg Walden. He's chairman of the Energy and Commerce Committee, and he's from Oregon. His committee has part of the jurisdiction here, and they're going to start marking up this bill this week. And the other guy is Kevin Brady of Texas. He's chairman of the Powerful Ways and Means Committee, both sort of talking about why they need to get this moving and get it moving fast.
Introduction of this bill is just the first step in helping American families across the country obtain truly affordable health care, and we're eager to get started.
As Republicans, we have a choice. We can act now, or we can keep fiddling around and squander this opportunity to repeal Obamacare, and begin a new chapter of freedom for the American people. House Republicans are choosing to act now.
Their audience right now is other Republicans, conservatives across the House and Senate, John, who already, in many ways, are panning this proposal in tweets calling it Obamacare Lite or Obamacare 2.0. A lot of them don't like the idea of continuing tax credits or what they think of as subsidies to help people pay for health care. They don't like the idea of extending the Medicaid expansion even for 2 years. Here's Rand Paul of Kentucky. He's leading a group of conservatives who today are out from the House and Senate, both panning this proposal. And this will give you a good idea of what Brady and Walden are talking about.
This is Obamacare Lite. It will not pass. Right. Conservatives aren't going to take it.
Rand Paul is part of a group of three senators who said that they're not voting for anything that doesn't completely and totally repeal Obamacare before there's any replacement. They think that this is not it. There's a group of another four senators who said they're not voting for anything that doesn't fully preserve the Medicaid expansion. That's a group of four Republicans. And then an eighth senator, Susan Collins of Maine, saying she doesn't want to vote for any replacement bill that cuts off Planned Parenthood, and this House GOP plan does that. So what all of this is displaying to you here are the different factions among Republicans now that Paul Ryan and Tom Price and the president are going to have to start to thread here, not only to get to 216 votes in the House, which will be difficult, but to get something out of the Senate that can then come back and pass House muster, maybe by Easter, Passover, maybe afterward. And it's going to be difficult with all the different factions involved here. One of the factions also are House moderates, people who are trying to defend the Medicaid expansion and who actually like to see some of the tax credit subsidies stay in place. Here's Charlie Dent. He's from Central Pennsylvania. Actually, he represents Hershey, Pennsylvania, my hometown, and he represents a group of House moderates here. I talked to Charlie Dent a little bit about the difficulty of putting together the votes, not only in the House right now, this week or next week, but by the summertime to get something passed and on the president's desk.
So you don't have the votes, you may not have the votes in the House. I've been asking, who are the eight Senate Democrats who are going to help us replace? You know.
Nobody knew health care was so complicated.
Well, yeah. Who knew? Who
knew? He's laughing because, of course, they knew how complicated it was. And that's why we're not getting health care cost estimates out of this Ryan plan, as well as the uncertainty about the votes that you're talking about.
And this is really important. You're talking about estimates. That's the CBO, the Congressional Budget Office. Markups of this plan start in House committees tomorrow. There is no CBO score, which means members don't know how much this costs, how exactly it's paid for. You have tax subsidies across this plan. There are no tax increases. Republicans don't believe in those, of course. Do they intend to increase the deficit? Will it reduce the deficit? Where do we pay for this and how much does it cost? And, John, that critical question. How many people lose coverage after 5 years or 10 years?
Todd Zwillig, Takeaway Washington correspondent, talking about health care and the new plan out of Capitol Hill. Thanks so much, Todd.
You got it, John.